This is Sports 180. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. We begin hour number three. Sports Talk will take over 1 hour from right now, and we still have a lot to cover. We'll hit the power poll at the end of the hour. We'll talk a little college football with Braden Gall. He was asking about blue bloods in college football. Is that a conversation that needs to be updated? We'll have that conversation coming up at 2:30. Maybe so. Heather Harrington's here. Joel Silverberg. I'm Josh Warden. We've talked some college football. The playoff will probably be updated here in the next few years. As we discussed earlier in the show, the survey that was done by Brett McMurphy, longtime, well-respected college football reporter at watchstadium.com, you can read more about it. But 88% of the FBS athletic directors who were surveyed said they would like to see the college football playoff expanded when the contract ends after the 2025 regular season. 72% believe 8 teams should qualify for the playoff. And there's also the talk of where you could go to 12 or 16 teams. I think the most likely scenario would be that, would be 8 teams. There's also been the discussion of 6. 72% believe 8 teams should qualify for the playoffs. 66% of the AD said the highest ranked non-Power 5 team should receive an automatic bid to an expanded playoff. And we talked about that earlier as well. There is a lot of debate out there about what kind of inclusion should the group of 5 receive in this conversation. The more teams you have in the playoff, obviously the better chance, but how much of a chance? Should they get an automatic bid at the group of 5 level? That's a conversation out there, always has been, and will continue to be a part of it.
Yeah, and I think when you're looking at 8, you're going to have a really hard time at keeping them out in regards to a definite spot. If you are a Power 5 league and you're like, well, we don't want to guarantee that, I think you're going to have a really hard time getting everybody on board if that is not made as a compromise. And I think they would be very deserving of it. I mean, you think back to UCF and their argument. I mean, what would have been wrong with putting them in as the 8 seed and seeing what happened? Now, I'm not saying you guarantee them a top 4 seed or anything like that. You just guarantee them a spot that, hey, listen, you're going to be able to compete. You might be going up against the best team in the country, but that is just how it shakes out this year. So if you think you can win a title, you got to beat them eventually.
Are you kind of saying, hey, UCF could go in there and take a beating just like Washington and Michigan State can as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I still think it is, when you get outside of the top 3, maybe even the top 4 in the country, I just remember how much of a debate we had this past year of, okay, so who's going to be the number 4? Because it was almost an afterthought too, because you knew they weren't going to do anything. You were only going to talk about them for one weekend, and then it was going to be, okay, on to the big 3. Who's going to survive out of those matchups? And I just feel like you get outside of just a handful, a very small handful of teams, and nobody else is really competing for an actual title.
Yeah, Joel Silverberg, you're still hesitant on the idea of a group of 5 team with an automatic bid, even if the playoff expands. Is that right?
Yeah, I would not grant them just an automatic bid, because you're going to have some years where the best group of 5 team might have 2 losses, and it would not be compelling for that team to go up against Alabama, Clemson, LSU, whoever, and lose by 55 points in a nationally televised game. I would create criteria where if a group of 5 team meets that criteria, then they should be guaranteed an automatic bid.
Well, and that's what it would be. That there would be language in there, just like with Notre Dame, how that was in the past, that they would get a shot. You had to have a certain ranking and a certain in whichever poll, or they would use the college football playoff poll. I mean, there would be criteria. They're not just saying, hey, the best non-Power 5, the best of the other 5, you get in. I mean, there would definitely be criteria.
No,
they are saying that.
Like, yeah, 66% are saying there's an automatic bid, that they would want to see an automatic bid. So you wouldn't have to reach a certain number.
Well, then how would they break down who the automatic bid was without any sort of criteria or language?
It would go by the college football playoff rankings, the highest ranked group of 5 team, whether they're ranked 15th or 22nd, if they're a group of 5 team,
okay,
whichever one's ranked.
Yeah, I misread that. I thought they had to meet a certain criteria and then they were in if they met that.
No, I'm recommending they meet a certain criteria. Okay. That's what it was in the BCS era. If a team, like when So I guess when Boise State, you know, went to the Fiesta Bowl, the criteria they had to meet to get there was they had to be undefeated and ranked in the top 12. When Northern Illinois went to the Orange Bowl, if a team was not ranked in the top 12, that team could get into the BCS, you know, one of the BCS bowl games if they were ranked ahead of a power conference champion. And Louisville was, you know, unexpectedly won the Big East, and so they were ranked like 22nd when Northern Illinois was ranked 16. So Northern Illinois went and got crushed by Florida State in the Orange Bowl that year. So there's certain parameters that can be set in place for it, but I would not guarantee saying, hey, no matter what happens, at least one group of five team is going to the playoff every year. I don't think that's good for the college football playoff.
And when we see this happen, a lot of it is not even necessarily for the good of football, for the game, probably, right? It's for the good of making some more money.
Making money,
and
yeah.
And opportunities to get in. If you have a 14 playoff, it is impossible for all of the Power 5 conferences to get in. So part of it would be just to open up the opportunity for those conferences before you even get to the group of five level of the conversation. And then, hey, if you're in, you have a shot. It's just realistically, the number one team, the number two team is not going to get knocked off early very often at all. The 4-5 game, I think, would easily be the most interesting if you average out all those years, because number five is the one that's closest to getting in to the current 14 playoffs. So what I'm saying there is, again, pretty obvious. But I don't even know that it's for the good of the game. I think it's more for the good of the sport financially and for the conferences and for, I guess, more teams, more schools to at least have an opportunity to be at the table. And then, again, take your shot at it, because there would be upsets sometimes. It's just that most often your number one team it's going to flex its muscles. But we've seen years where the number one team is not the best team. So, again, upsets would happen. I just don't think very often. Like this past year, LSU and Ohio State, they would have been handing out some whoopings. I think Clemson probably would have been doing that as the 3 seed as well.
Yeah, they would have definitely felt better about maybe how everything shook out with a win extra under their belt. But I think you're right. I think this is just a way to grow the sport, to make more money, to have a higher profile and to lift their profile. I mean, because college football, its biggest competitor is the NFL. And you see how many teams get in to the playoffs in the NFL and how many rounds there are in the NFL playoffs. So this would just be a step in that direction. And I do think they are trying to get more people involved, because at some point during the season, whether it's 3 weeks in or 6 weeks in, you realize for most of the fan bases out there, you are not competing for a playoff spot at that point in time. So if you are now competing for 8 playoff spots, more teams have the opportunity to be involved and be in the discussion. You're not just talking about 3 or 4 teams. Now you're talking about anywhere from 10 to 12 to 15 teams that could potentially work their way into those top 8 spots.
Especially if Power 5 conferences get automatic bids entirely. Then you've just got, you know, if you have a weak division in the Big 10 or the Pac-12, it can come down to one game where a team suddenly just springs an upset and they snag a 7 or an 8 seed.
Yeah, that could happen. It would be a rare occasion, but it would happen. It would still create attention, I guess, if that happened. Most often, I would say you'll see Ohio State, Clemson, those teams that are, at least recently, they've been far superior to their opponent in the championship game. It's going to be throat step in time to make sure they take care of that automatic bid and set up home field advantage in the first round of the playoff. If we could get the proposal there, that was close to a 50-50 vote. Was it 53-47?
Yes.
Preferring a campus site for the first round going to the top 4 seeds. And did we say this earlier? It would have been Memphis, right, as the group of five representative if you just went off the college football playoff ranking this past year? The number 17 ranked team in the country. I don't know that this Memphis team I would have liked to have seen in the playoff. But you want to talk about, again, you never know, but I think that would have been a pretty ugly showing. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Memphis puts up some points to where it's not as ugly, but it would have given up some points too.
Yeah, they definitely would have, and I don't like it. I definitely want to reaffirm that. I think that there is the opportunity for more times than not to have a Power 5 representative in there. But if they're not going to have strict language where you get an automatic berth if you're ranked in the top 10 or the top 12, I don't know what the number would be, but you would have to be highly ranked. I think UCF was like number 8 when they were on the outside looking into the playoff. So I think that teams like that deserve it, not just a blanket, oh, the highest non-Power 5 school gets in, highest ranked. That language is not specific enough.
All right, so a little college football playoff expansion talk. It's going to be a few more years, but at the end of the 2025 season, as surveyed by Brett McMurphy, 88% of FBS football subdivision athletic directors want an expanded college football playoff. 72% of them say eight teams would be the preferred expansion. We'll come back here on Sports 180. We know that Tom Brady is replacing Jameis Winston as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback. A quote from Jameis that I just love. Allow Jameis to introduce himself. Coming up next, we'll talk to Braden Gall at 2:30 right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thanks for being with us. Download the WNML app. Listen online. Listen on Apple Podcasts as well if you ever want to go back and check out anything from our show or any show on the Sports Animal. Heather, we know that Tom Brady is replacing Jameis Winston as the starting quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
We do. We do know that. Great interview today on Howard Stern as well by the GOAT. So that was interesting.
Now, Jameis Winston, yeah, which one's the GOAT there, by the way? Is that Tom or is that Howard?
I think it's both. I think yeah. If you take two, they're two titans of industry, that's for sure.
Winston was asked by Fox News, as I read via ESPN.com, about the replacement. Tom Brady coming into Tampa and Jameis now looking for a new destination as a free agent. He said, quote, "One thing you can learn about me is my faith. I have tremendous faith in my Lord. And one thing about Tom Brady is it's understood that he is the GOAT. For you to get replaced by Tom Brady in a city that you love so much, I guess that's kudos to me." Kudos to me, as I was replaced by the greatest of all time in Tampa.
I think I would have had a different statement. I would have said, hey, you know, you win some, you lose some. It's hard to beat out Tom Brady, even though he's 43 years old. But I'm just looking forward to my future. But yeah, kudos to Jameis Winston for taking the high road. I will say that.
He did also add this, quote, "Eventually I'm going to have to play the Tom Brady's, the Patrick Mahomes, and all the other great quarterbacks. Eventually that's how you win Super Bowls, and that's what I want." So said that it was an honor and a blessing to meet and play against Tom Brady previously in 2017. And he said, "I dream to be able to be the type of quarterback he is for his team, to our team." So he's still looking for a new destination. Where should Jameis go? I saw someone in the, covering the NFL list a few teams that would at least make sense. The Chargers were brought up. The Jaguars were brought up. The Steelers were brought up. But we've talked about that as well. I don't think it's a bad thing if Jameis looks to an organization to go be a backup and to play for Pittsburgh, which is well-run. You have a head coach who's respected and a starting quarterback in Big Ben coming back. Jameis maybe being around Ben and backing him up, having a chance maybe to be the starter there in the future, or find another opportunity somewhere else like Teddy Bridgewater did after going to New Orleans. That's something that could help him as well. So I like the idea of Pittsburgh a lot, but where Jameis ends up going, where Cam Newton ends up going, two of the big questions out there with NFL free agency.
And he really might have an area or an avenue to play even this year with Big Ben coming off a major injury. Now, Big Ben says that he's going to be fine, but you know, how durable is he at this point? I think that that's a valid question to ask. So there might be opportunity for Jameis Winston to see the field this year. And you know what I think about Mike Tomlin. I think he is definitely one of the top five best coaches in the NFL right now. I think he is just incredible. And I think being with somebody like Mike Tomlin and like Big Ben, I mean, Big Ben has learned the hard way in some instances about navigating his personal life and being responsible and taking care of his own business. And that's definitely somebody that I feel like Jameis Winston can learn from and keep growing from. And I also like their offense. I mean, they've got offensive weapons. I know they don't have Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown anymore, but Juju Smith-Schuster, I mean, if you are able to get on the field and you've got targets like that, that caliber, that can really help your development when you're trying to land a starting gig. So I like that. I hadn't considered Jameis Winston going to the Pittsburgh Steelers, but Pittsburgh is in desperate need of a backup, and I think this is kind of a no-brainer signing.
So we'll see what happens with Jameis Winston, as starting opportunities right away appear to be limited. NFL opportunities, though, should still be there. And unless he's had a birthday come up, I believe he's still just 25 years old. So either way, still young with a lot of experience. I think still potential. I think there's potential for him and Marcus Mariota to be better in the future. Mariota's another guy. He's going to Las Vegas hoping to kind of restart things after it didn't work out with the Tennessee Titans.
Now, you might be a little biased since Marcus Mariota is going to the Las Vegas Raiders, but who do you think has, like, who have you seen more from at this point in time, where if you were taking somebody for your team as a backup role, potentially moved into a starter role in the future, would you go Marcus or would you go Jameis?
Well, I would say that part of it would come down to money. Straight up, if the price is the same, I would probably go with Jameis. Be very close. If you're taking Marcus, I don't have any problem with that. I would probably go Jameis. The Titans had more team success with Mariota. The upside in terms of ability as a passer, I would go with Jameis and what he's shown.
Yeah, like, I think the floor with Marcus Mariota is higher than Jameis Winston's floor, but I think the ceiling is higher for Jameis Winston than it is for Marcus Mariota. Am I off base there?
I don't think that. Joel Silverberg is a Tennessee Titans fan. What would you say in that conversation? Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston, two guys that were picked back-to-back in the NFL draft. Now looking at Mariota is a backup, and Winston perhaps looking at that kind of role as well.
I think Winston's ceiling is definitely higher from a talent standpoint. I think Mariota is a better leader. I think Mariota is a little bit more level-headed. Definitely plays a little bit more mistake-free football. Though Mariota did have some pretty turnover-prone seasons. If we're comparing the two, it's hard to say. I mean, Mariota at least got to the postseason. He had winning seasons in Tennessee. Granted, they were all 9-7 seasons, but he got a playoff win. And Winston can't say that. So I think comparing the two of them, it's kind of funny looking back on it now when there was so much debate comparing those two quarterbacks coming out of college.
Yeah, I will say on Jameis's side, he's never thrown more interceptions than touchdowns. He's thrown a lot of interceptions, don't get me wrong. He's always thrown more touchdowns than interceptions. In 2017, that's when Mariota managed to throw 15 interceptions and only 13 touchdowns. Last year, 2018, I should say, it was 11-8. And then this past season, 7-2. Not bad, just not many plays that he was making before losing his job to Ryan Tannehill. Winston's numbers are just inflated everywhere. 33-30 this past year, which is pretty remarkable. And the year before, he had lost his starting job at different times to Ryan Fitzpatrick. He had 19 touchdowns, 14 interceptions.
It's pretty easy to put up those kind of numbers when garbage time starts midway through the second quarter.
Oh, man. That was a shot fired there, Joel Silverberg.
I went to high school in South Florida. I've got some friends that are Bucks fans.
Yeah. Yeah, we're having quite a debate when we're talking about Mariota and Winston, because so often when you talk about two guys that are going to be linked against one another going into a draft, the conversation is had as if one guy will make it and one guy won't. And too often we don't consider, well, both could end up being really good or both might not. And that can be forgotten in this conversation. Like, Wentz versus Goff, there's the debate of those two guys. They're the top two picks. I would say overall, both have made it. I would take Wentz over Goff, but both made it in that instance. In this one, I would Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning. That's one where one guy clearly made it, one guy didn't. This is one where Mariota and Jameis Winston are both looking at new homes to try to restart their careers.
Yeah, they're always going to be linked. We're always going to be talking about, I think, Joe Burrow and Tua in the future. I think those are two guys, and maybe even Justin Herbert sort of in there as a third guy on the peripheral. But I just feel like the biggest thing is you saw the standard set with Peyton and Ryan, where one was just just doing crazy things and changing the game of football and how it's played, and then the other one fell short, and that sort of became the barometer of how we measure who's going to be the Peyton Manning, who's going to be the Ryan Leaf. It's like, I think you're right. It's like two greats can't coexist in the same draft class.
Yeah, and then you have Mitch Trubisky, who's always going to be linked to both Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. I don't know if you knew this, but the Bears could have drafted Mahomes or Watson, and instead chose Trubisky. That's a very little-known fact in the NFL. We will come back with Braden Gall. We'll talk some college football and maybe a little NFL with him as well. A blue blood conversation in college football that Braden was having earlier this week. We'll talk about that with him coming up next. Another half hour to go before Sports Talk begins. Alongside Heather Harrington and Joel Silverberg, I'm Josh Ward. You're listening to Sports 180 on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal. Back on Sports 180, thank you for being with us. We are with you for another half hour. Sports Talk will take over coming up at 3 o'clock. All guests join us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, and we are pleased right now to welcome to the show our friend Braden Gall from Nashville, SiriusXM, the Cover 2 podcast as well with Athlon Sports. Braden, good afternoon. We appreciate the time as always. I saw on Twitter you were kind of asking aloud about the status maybe of blue blood programs in college football. As you started to go through the thought process on that, what kind of came to mind? What kind of reaction? What kind of yelling did you hear from people on Twitter when all that came up?
Normal amounts of Twitter yelling. But at least it was about sports instead of something else. I'm fascinated. Like, realignment is like total catnip to me as a college football junkie. It's teams, it's rivalries, it's geography, it's big business. But the other one that's like catnip to me is sort of expectation setting for programs sort of over time, not necessarily under a current coach or, you know, with a current, you know, group of players or whatever. And to me, I've always called it national championship DNA. It's very hard, I think, to change your DNA. I think that's probably why, you know, I use that phrase. And of course, lots of people asking about Tennessee. Again, people are like, well, how is Tennessee this or that or whatever with the last 15 years? And I say, guys, it's a bigger picture conversation than that. It's about two things to me. I define, and again, we probably have this conversation before, but I define national championship DNA, like in your core. Again, I hope I don't have to explain DNA to people, but access to players and unlimited resources, both from the university and from the fans. And Tennessee checks every box. In fact, I think what's interesting about Tennessee is it gets knocked for its recruiting base. And if you just tell somebody on Twitter, hey, draw a 6-hour radius around Knoxville, Tennessee, and tell me what states you hit. And I think people will be shocked at how many players come from within that 6-hour radius. And, you know, not to mention the growth of the mid-state and in-state talent as well. So I don't think it's even close. I would have Tennessee probably the 11th, 12th, 13th best quote-unquote program in America. And if you really start, you know, looking at lists, I think the fringe teams are the more interesting debates. You know, UCLA, Oregon, Wisconsin, West Virginia, Virginia Tech, you know, those Oklahoma State, like really good programs, but have never really competed for national championships since integration, really. Like Michigan State's a good program. It got to the playoff once, but it's largely been a non-factor in the national championship race for 50, 60 years. So, I think there's proof of concept, certainly with Tennessee. You're the seventh winningest program. You've got unlimited money. You know, you've won national championships in multiple decades under multiple coaches. I think Tennessee goes without saying that they have what it takes to win national titles. No program is immune from bad decision-making, and Tennessee's, let's just call it, had some bad decision-making lately.
So by your argument, you can gain national championship DNA and you can never lose it?
Probably with one exception, and I think the Big Ten schools and namely Nebraska have struggled from this. If all of a sudden the human beings start moving away from your campus, that's a population shift is one way that can happen. And I think that's why if you look at Nebraska since 1995, you look at Michigan, again, outside of Ohio State in 2002 and 2014, you have Michigan in 97. You have to go all the way back to the 60s to find a Big Ten team claim a national championship. Penn State won a couple in the 80s as an independent. Nebraska won three as a big, I think Big 12 and Big 8 team. And Nebraska's been hurt the most by this because the modernization of recruiting, how you accelerate the calendar, and all of a sudden you're getting kids on campus, you know, unofficially as sophomores and juniors. And if you wait till the official visit period, or at least the old official visit period, which was in the fall of a senior year, you've already missed the boat on a recruit. And it didn't used to be like that. Prop 48, was also a big reason why Nebraska was so good, scholarship limitations. So I think the rules that have been put in place and then population trends have hurt Nebraska and the Big Ten schools. But as long as the access to players and the best players come from, even more so today than ever before, Georgia, Florida, you know, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Ohio's a really good state for talent, but Pennsylvania doesn't produce the same number of elite level athletes as it did in the 60s and 70s and 80s. The Rust Belt population trend hurt the Big Ten. So Nebraska, I would say, has lost a little bit of that. Miami is another really interesting one. It's hard to argue that they have arguably the best recruiting base in the entire country, but their fan base is pretty fickle. It's not as loyal. Stadium's off campus. They don't spend a ton of money, even though it's a private school. Like, it's just, if you put Nebraska and Miami together, you have the perfect football program, because Nebraska has, like, second to none facilities, second to none fans, second to none money, and zero athletes within 6 hours of their campus, and Miami's sort of the exact opposite. So I think you have to have both of those things. It's what makes Texas A&M so fascinating, because they have both of those things in spades and have never really competed for national championships, you know, in 50 or 60 years. So I think A&M is fascinating. Clemson and Georgia would be in those quote-unquote sleeping giant phases, but we know that those two teams compete for national championships. We've seen it happen over the last 30 or 40 years.
Brayden Gall with us, the Cover 2 podcast with Athlon Sports, Sirius XM. Oregon seems to possess a lot of spike potential, right? Like you note with Mariota, you can make a jump, but in terms of investment, we've seen them succeed. Energy that can be around the program, is Oregon one of those make elite programs where the potential can be a lot higher than what we've seen overall?
Yeah, and the Pac-12 in general has programs that I'm just not sure about. Like, I think Washington, you know, they won a national title in the 90s. They got back to a Rose Bowl in 2000. They made it to the playoff in 2015. So, like, there's clearly some proof of concept there, but there's not as much access to talent. Same thing with Oregon. You know, you've played in the national championship game twice in the last 10 years. That's pretty good. And for a program that maybe doesn't have national title DNA, I think Oregon's the one program, because the last shift for me would have been the Florida, the sunshine surge, if you will, when Florida State, and Miami in the 80s all of a sudden became powerhouses, right? Like, it's all of a sudden, and we know why. It's because integration in the late 60s and 70s, and all of a sudden all these athletes in Florida were going to Miami, Florida State, and Florida, and all of a sudden three programs that largely weren't winning anything elevated themselves to sort of blue blood status, and now no one would argue that those three programs can't win, although Miami, like I just said, sort of is in this weird no man's land. Oregon is the only program I've seen in the last 20, 25 years that sort of elevated itself to that top tier, and that's because their facilities and their money and their resources are arguably second to none. I mean, they are as cool and as hip and as trendy with kids as it gets. And, you know, you've done it with multiple coaches. I think historically you'd say, well, Oregon is in that second tier that needs to have a transcendent quarterback to probably get to the national title conversation, whether that's Russell Wilson at Wisconsin, you know, Michael Vick at Virginia Tech, you know, 2011 Oklahoma State that almost played for the national championship. You know, you have to have, you know, Pat White with West Virginia. Like, you need a transcendent talent at quarterback for those second tier teams to be good. And you could look at Darren Thomas in 2010 and then Marcus Mariota in 14 as two of those guys. I just think Oregon is the most interesting to discuss because they're going into California right now and they're dominating the Pac-12 in recruiting. And if they can continue to prove that they can do that, I don't know why they wouldn't be as dangerous as a USC or a Washington or anyone else, you know, west of Texas.
Brayden, something else that's going on sort of in college football is the stadium put out a survey asking anonymously for athletic directors to vote whether they would be in favor of expanding the playoff. It looked like a resounding 88% is in favor of that. Whenever the current deal is done, do you see expansion? And then could you work more of the blue blood conversation into an 8-team playoff where more teams are actually competing for the national title?
It's really funny. So I am a staunch anti-expansionist. I'm good with four. I don't want it to go bigger. I like that people's feelings are hurt at the end of the year. I think that's good for the sport. I think it makes it, I want it to be exclusive. I don't want it to be easy to get in. But here's what people don't think, and it's just common sense, but it doesn't, like, I think you're going to trim the blue blood list even further, not expand it. That's the problem with this. Because if you're a lot of those programs I just mentioned, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, Wisconsin, Virginia Tech, you know, North Carolina is going to be really good this year. You look at these programs that are sort of on that level. Baylor and TCU have come close to the playoff. Oregon, Washington, UCLA, like Michigan State. So many really good, viable winning programs that normally don't ever sniff a national championship. You're telling me the ones that couldn't do it when all they had to do was win one game in the BCS era and all they have to do now is win two games, that they're going to all of a sudden be able to win three games? You're actually going to make it harder to win the national championship. And people don't, if you ask coaches, they will tell you, like, there's no way that a coach at Wisconsin wants to have to play in the Big Ten championship game against probably Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State. Then you're going to have to play in back-to-back-to-back games in a tournament. You're going to have to play Georgia, Texas, and Clemson. Like, you're telling me Wisconsin's athletes are going to stand up against that gauntlet four games in a row? I just think people don't realize, like, if you expand, you're actually making it harder to win the championship than you are making it easier. And I don't think anybody truly grasps that. And athletic directors, they're going to go with the money. Like, ADs, presidents, TV people, of course it's going to expand because everyone's going to make more money. And so that's, you know, and coaches, some coaches like it on the surface because if they get into the playoff, they're going to get a bonus and a boost, and it makes them look great, and they get to be included in the playoffs the way 9-7 teams get to be included in the playoffs in the NFL. But you're not any closer to winning a national championship if you're Missouri. You know, like, if you're South Carolina, like, you're not going to win unless you have, I mean, Alshon Jeffrey, Marshawn Lattimore, and Michael Vick on the same team. Like, you're just not going to win the SEC, go through that gauntlet, and then win three straight games in national championship caliber performances. I just don't see why would that be possible if it hasn't been possible for 50 years when all you had to do was win one game in the BCS or two in the playoff era.
You can find him on Twitter at Braden Gall. Braden, what can college football fans find with the Cover 2 podcast?
So we did a really deep media dive. I brought back Mitch Light, co-host previously, now of The Athletic, managing the state of Tennessee as a managing editor. And he and I did a really deep dive over an hour just about how fans are the best fact checkers. You know, sports fans are the best fact checkers in the world. And it's there's so much pressure on fans from a media standpoint to decipher between what's real, what's information, what's news, what's reporting, what's opinion. It's not just sports, it's everywhere. So we did a really long, deep media dive looking at how the landscape has changed and what you have to do to sort of parse out information. And the college football, frankly, is probably the sport that's hurt the most by the current media landscape because there's no information and coaches control all of it. And then we had a little bit lighter conversation today on the pod. I went live today, argued about beer, and we argued about, old football, you know, style of play from the 80s and 90s, and, you know, had a little bit more fun. What would it look like if college football came back with no fans, with no conference play? A little bit lighter conversation, a little bit more fun today. So check out the last two episodes, Cover 2 on iTunes or Cover 2 on Spotify, App on Sports on iTunes. Rate, review, and subscribe, please.
Yeah, friendly conversations are very important, friendly arguments right now, because too much of other stuff going on out there. Enjoy it on the Cover 2 podcast. Yes. Subscribe, yes, and download. Braden, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much, and we will talk to you next week.
Yep, absolutely. Stay home, stay safe. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Braden Gall, our friend from Nashville, joining us on Sports 180. We will come back with the Power Poll here on Sports 180, and then we'll get you to Sports Talk coming up at 3 o'clock. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward, Joel Silverberg here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us this afternoon. Final segment here before Sports Talk will take over coming up at 3 o'clock. Alongside Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. Big thanks to Joel Silverberg for everything today. And I want to say a big special thank you to everybody in our community who is going above and beyond to help. One, we talk about helping support local businesses, supporting local restaurants, all that stuff. Also, the people in the medical field, those that are helping people that are dealing with anything that might be going on right now. And we are doing a little bit more to help honor and recognize those. So we want to say congratulations to our first hero of health, as you can go to our website and submit your nominations. But Dusty Barnett is an advanced EMT at Morgan County Ambulance Service. He's a paramedic student at Roane State Community College, cares about his patients, and provides excellent patient care. Dusty and his wife have 8 children. All the work that Dusty is doing is very much appreciated. We appreciate the nomination that he received, as he is our first hero of health, which is sponsored by Roane State Community College. Visit roanestate.edu, where we're all succeeding online together. And if you have someone you'd like to nominate, get on our website and make that nomination.
Yeah, and thanks to Dusty for just being such a vital member of the community right now, and to all of our health heroes. So make sure if you have somebody, if you've got a nurse, a doctor, that is doing some big things right now, you know, and we're very grateful for it. Just log on 991thesportsanimal.com, and you can nominate them. And thanks to Roane State Community College for also jumping on board with us and helping recognize these heroes.
No doubt. As we say hello to John Wilkerson, and John, I would also offer this reminder as we think about what's going on, and everybody's life is different. Everybody's position right now is different, but instead of going on Facebook or Twitter or whatever and griping and arguing and whatever, all that stuff that's going on, maybe spend a little more time thinking about these people that are doing everything they can to help one another, because that's really what I think is most important right now.
I don't think there's any question. It's been something to see. I don't know if you've seen it, but John Bon Jovi has been taking verses. He's put together a song, if you can't do what you do, then do what you can. And so he's taken verses from either Facebook or Twitter or from Instagram, and he's just continuing to add to this long song, and it's really been something. But that's time that's much better spent rather than pointing fingers and screaming and shaking your fist at the sky. As far as just finding somebody to blame, that would be much more productive to just support those that are doing their very best to make sure that we're, one, taken care of, or two, as close to just the resemblance of normalcy as possible.
No doubt about it. John Wilkerson on with us on Sports Talk in 3 o'clock. Before we get there, though, let's hit today's power poll.
Captain, we're losing power in the warp engine.
Nuclear power pants.
What's up? I'm Kenny Powers.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
I have the power!
With great power comes great responsibility.
Full power, Mr. Scott.
The Power Pole, driven by Ted Russell Ford. 2 locations to serve you, Kingston Pike and Parkside Drive.
Alrighty, John, today is National Zoo Lovers Day, and Heather and I gave out our number one zoo animals earlier. Would you like to lead us off, as we're going to go with the power poll of our top 5 zoo animals? It's a tough list to put together, if you ask me. Would you like to lead us off today?
Boy, you're not kidding. It is a tough list. In fact, I'm going to start honorable mention with zebras. Love looking at them, no matter when I get that opportunity. But they didn't make the top 5. At number 5, the last time that Penny and I went to the zoo, which was within the last calendar year, it was otters they're just so fun to watch. They swim. They have great fun. They've got the little hands. Otters would be number 5. They had penguins, which is also, I realize that's kind of an aquarium thing too, but they're also at the zoo. Always love the opportunity to see penguins. Number 3, elephants. In fact, the top 3, all at one point or another have claim and laid claim to King of the Jungle. So elephants three, gorillas two, but for me it's lions. Just to watch them hang out there and see what's rolling through their mind is it's like, yeah, you're lucky there's a fence there, pal.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
They're like, I've been in this zoo a long time. I could still tear you up.
Good list there, John Wilkerson. Heather, your top five zoo animals.
I think that is a great list. And I go for the exotic things, you know, things that you're not going to see on a normal basis. I've never seen one. And as soon as they open up Zoo Knoxville, we are going because we are season pass members. The anteater. We've got an anteater that's on loan from the Nashville Zoo, so I cannot wait to see this thing in real life. It looks bizarre, and I am here for it. Number four, it's the reptile house. Give me all that slithery, crazy-looking stuff, and thank goodness it's behind glass where it should be. I don't ever want them in my house, but I am more than willing to always walk through the reptile house. Number three is going to be apes, whether you're seeing gorillas, chimpanzees, the gibbons. I mean, there's an amazing collection. Went to the Bronx Zoo last year and walked through the gorilla habitat. Unbelievable. It was amazing. Number two is the red pandas because they're just so cute. And number one is the king of the jungle, the lion, like John said.
All right, a couple honorable mentions. The otters get an honorable mention to me. That's the one that I think Owen has been able to gravitate toward, partly because they're lower to the ground, so he can get right up there against the glass and see them swimming around. But, yeah, they're just having a good time. They're living how we want to tell ourselves that we're going to live in quarantine time. That's the otter life. Also, rhinos. Just I have a ton of respect for the rhinoceros.
Nice call.
Ton of respect.
And ours are named Polly and Dolly. How cute is that?
Yeah. I find them to be a little nosy.
Oh, John.
Well done, John Wilkerson. Number five for me, the gibbons are, they are wild. They are out of control. They're setting the rules for themselves. And you know what? They're loving life. So I go with the gibbons, number five. Red pandas, number four for me on the list. Love the red panda. Elephants, number three. Elephants just roaming. And you know what? They take up a lot of space, but they've earned it. I'll go with lions and tigers. I'm not choosing in this battle. I'll go lions and tigers. Split at number two. That's right. And then number one, shout out to him on hump day. Let's go with the camel. I think it's an easy pick at number one. Taking their time, not in a hurry. Camel's going to take care of business, though. You can bet on that.
And if you don't like, if they don't like you, they will spit on you. So there, you have that too.
That's right. And well, then Josh throws
it's
out
a nasty
there,
stereotype.
I have ridden a camel. Thank you for asking.
Many, many times. You know what? Not often enough. That's the Power Poll, our top five zoo animals on National Zoo Lovers Day. John, what's coming up next on Sports Talk?
Hey, I got to throw in one more honorable mention just because they were really fun to see the last time, and that is giraffes. It's amazing when you look at just how they're constructed. Always amazing to see and stand as close as you can to giraffes. But we've got another full boat. We will talk mock drafts and a mockable draft from one Joel Silverberg at 3:35. Kim Mulkey, who's part of the incredible class that's going into the Basketball Hall of Fame, the Baylor coach, she'll join us at 4:05. Ron Higgins, the editor of Tiger Rag, he'll be along at 4:35. John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, he'll join us at 5:05. Mike Barnett, plenty to talk about. Major League Baseball, Arizona, could it happen? He'll join us at 5:35. He's the Cleveland video coordinator. And then Ryan McGee, ESPN senior writer of ESPN. I said ESPN twice there. He'll join us at 6:15 after our Sports Fix at 6, and we'll also talk a little bit about this being the 46th anniversary of Hank Aaron surpassing the Babe. So all that and more today on Sports Talk.
Hey, John, do you know why you never want a giraffe to run your NFL draft?
No, Josh, why wouldn't you want a giraffe to run your NFL draft?
Because they would overlook all the good players.
Overlook because they have a long neck.
Yeah, they're really tall. Way up there.
That's what makes it funny.
Yeah, it's a hype joke.
I'm going to give John the Dad Joke of the Day award. He nailed that with the nosy.
All right. It's fine. Not a battle. We're just out here sharing jokes, having a good time. Sports Talk's coming up next. We'll see you tomorrow at noon on Sports 180 here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.